And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scott Hertz over here on the remote microphone. It's back. We're back.
Yeah, I know.
It's back. We're just getting settled in again. So.
Yeah.
Chairs absolutely. Are still warm, though, so it's good.
Yeah, no, it's it is good to be back.
Yes.
I will say that. For our second year, woohoo! Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Today, we will be going back to that wretched hive of scum and villainy known as the U.S. presidential politics. It's getting serious now because there's just 25 days till the Iowa caucuses, but will Donald Trump still be inevitable when actual votes are cast? And what's up with the drama in the Democratic Party? Yeah, there's actual drama in the Democratic Party, so we'll talk about that. And then we'll talk about how the current president, Barack Obama, launched his final year in office by signing an executive order to attempt in his small way to offer a level of gun control in the United States. Naturally, this is being greeted by some criticism from Republicans. And then finally, we'll talk about a standoff in Oregon between a group called the Citizens for Constitutional Freedom, and they are facing off against pretty much every law enforcement agency in the alphabet. And they've almost finished their first week of their standoff. But what's to be done about the so-called Al-Qaeda, and to what degree should these people be taken seriously, or at least their issues be taken seriously anyway? But first, another standoff, and this is a much more serious one in the Middle East. It's between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And in case you're kind of getting back to the news after a holiday break, there was New Year's Day executions in Saudi Arabia, because that's how they roll in Saudi Arabia, is by welcoming the new year by beheading 47 people. Now, 43 of them were Al-Qaeda militants. One, though, was a very popular Shia cleric named Namir Bakir al-Nimir. And this has caused some... I'm underselling that. Some stress in Iranian-Saudi relations, because... Yes, if you're not familiar with how sectarian divides work out in the Middle East, Iran is Shia, Saudi Arabia is Shiite. So in the midst of already a lot of tension in the Middle East over ISIS, we have now perhaps a real dangerous boiling point between pretty much the two dominant powers in the Middle East.
I just want to mention that Saudi Arabia is Sunni.
Yes, that's right.
See,
sorry.
It's okay, because all week there's been, I've heard at least two or three corrections because of this. They are so close. And, you know, it's the division in Islam. I was thinking back to when back in the day on the old show, Oliver Oxide put it best when he said, until they get that Sunni versus Shiite thing sorted out, we are never going to see peace in the Middle East. And he was correct. Because that's exactly what's going on. Now, it sounds like I tried to find more information on the 47 who were killed by the Saudis.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't find too much about them. And,
no.
You know, you're saying they're terrorists, and rightly so. But it seems that they'll call anybody a terrorist, especially those that don't follow the playbook. And from what I could tell, the cleric himself, Numi, I'm going to blow his name, of course, but he it sounded like he got beheaded for having an opinion.
Yeah,
I don't. I tried to find out, like, the problem in the West and in a lot of places is that you just see a guy wearing the gear and with the beard, the typical imam, not typical necessarily, but the angry imam, and you don't know what he's saying. There's no context there. The assumption is, oh, he must be saying something bad.
Yeah.
But I think I went to Al Jazeera or whatever for the subtitles, and it was like he all he had was an opinion about the Saudi government, which he didn't like, because he was. The minority in Saudi Arabia are the Shia. There's a pocket of them, and he
in the East,
kind of represents them. Or he's symbolically, I guess he's martyred to them now, whether anybody likes it or not. But it's intensified the back and forth now. It was, you know, in Saudis versus Iran, essentially now they were fighting the proxy war in Yemen. And it sounds like what had initially happened was after this went down, the Iranians are famous for storming embassies, as they did back in 79, stormed the Saudi embassy, and the Saudis got mad about this. But now it seems there was a report that the Saudis have bombed the Iranian embassy in Yemen, where the proxy war is going on between the two of them right now. So there aren't actual hostilities between the two countries physically, but it's all playing out in Yemen, where there's the Houthis are aligned with Iran, being, I'm going to blow it, Shia. Yeah. And Saudis, Sunni, scrapping it out there. And of course, it's just escalating by the day now. So.
No,
Namir Al-Namir.
Al-Namir, there was nothing to say he was had terrorist ties or terrorist leanings. He was definitely an anti. I guess if you're critical of the government in Saudi Arabia, you are categorized as anti-government, and that's how they work in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah,
so.
But they also flog people for being gay or a blogger, so it's like they have their own set of rules.
Yeah, the point I'm trying to get at, though, is, most of them were identified as terrorists, and just about everybody in the world identifies Al-Qaeda as a terrorist group. But Al-Namir was not one of them. They seem to like – it seemed to be like a clean sweep of, they were trying to get the jail population down by, taking out a lot of people at once. And Al-Namir seemed to get caught up with it. And the fact that he wasn't a terrorist or lumped in with a lot of these other beheadings. And by the way, I don't think you should behead anybody, even terrorists. I think that's sort of one of the ongoing.
And I would say presumed terrorists too, because like I said, I couldn't find anything about these
people.
They probably didn't. I have no idea what they did, right? They're just, terrorists.
If they had a trial, it was probably a secret trial. It's interesting that it sort of set off this week, as we've been following the news, a realization, at least here in the West, that Saudi Arabia isn't such a great place. I mean, we hear talk about it all the time about how it's our ally in the Middle East, and for the United States as well as Canada. But they are not such a great people, or at least the people who run Saudi Arabia aren't such a great people. Which brings us to the Canadian side story that's taken over somewhat in our country, which is the sale of armored vehicles, $15 billion worth of armored vehicles from what's the name of the company?
Is it General Dynamics?
Yes.
For 10 points, name the company. Yeah, I think it's General Dynamics.
But this was a deal that was sort of done and closed under the previous government, but people have been... There was a protest on Parliament Hill yesterday of people who wanted to want the current government to put the kibosh on the deal, and I'm not sure how realistic that is.
And it was met with a shrug too. John was on and said, "Well, there's not really much we can do," and that's a fairly typical response. And of course, they could put the blame squarely on the previous government, but it isn't necessarily them. Like with military contracts, it's always, to me, just in my opinion, it's a sketchy business, right? It's always like, these things are designed to injure and kill people, but you have to keep the, cruise missile people happy and the people who build armored vehicles is like, well, it's a straight up deal. There's not much we can do. And they won't repeal it. There's no way because there's just too much at stake and they'll,
Well, the political economic downside of it is it's a $15 billion contract for
it's a lot
major
of jobs.
Ontario manufacturer a time where they're talking about record low Canadian dollar, economic cooling off period going on till maybe even 2020. So, I mean, just the optics of it from an economic point of view is, Saudi Arabia is bad, but if no one can get it, we're going to lose good jobs, that's probably going to hurt us in the long run, which is a cynical way of looking at it, but it can't be helped.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'll just say, at least with the previous government, say, just assuming that Russia did this.
Yeah.
Harper & Co. would have pulled out all of the stops to stop the deal.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So now it's just kind of met with a shrug. And that's presumptive, too. I'm not saying that they would do that, but it's always like they need to find some excuse to punish economically, but... That's exactly it, though. It would punish a lot of the workers at General Dynamics in an economy where manufacturing isn't exactly booming. Sounds like the market did another crash again today. I guess that's the topic for another day, but there's not much we can do. Yeah, so this it's strange that the Saudis worked this. They said it was the largest execution, mass execution in 3 decades. And they're obviously trying to send some kind of message, the worst possible message, I believe, not just specifically to Iran, but, you know, to their enemies. Let's say this is how we deal with this. And it's going to – the repercussions are going to go beyond just sort of the Saudis and Iran. It sounds like it's going to affect not only everything in the area, but Iraq specifically, because Iraq has a sort of a different mix of Sunni and Shia and Kurds as well.
Yeah.
And, of course, they're the hot zone right now next to Syria. Iraq is next in line in terms of, well, we'll call it the proxy war, but who's taking sides with whom? Because Iraq works out to about 60% Shia and 40% Sunni, and most of the Kurds are Sunni. And, of course, this is versus ISIS. All of these divisions, again, we were talking about it before, having the Venn diagram of the flowcharts. Like, well, who is fighting who now? We don't know. So it's kind of thrown a wrench into that whole thing of this united effort to fight ISIS, Daesh specifically. And then, of course, there's the subplots going on in Yemen.
Yeah.
You know, normally what's going on in Yemen and in Syria would have been stories onto themselves. But now it's just pile on, right? Pile on and see. I don't think this is going to calm down anytime soon because there's the rage. Even in Toronto, the Toronto protest was fairly massive too. Like, it's not, this has touched a lot of nerves worldwide. So I can't see it calming down anytime soon. Thankfully, I think when the embassy, I'm not sure if anybody was killed in the Yemen embassy attack or the one in.
I haven't followed up lately, but there are mixed reports about how close the bombs got. There are people saying the main building wasn't touched. And then there were other reports saying that people who worked at the embassy were injured, but no one was killed.
Yeah, no doubt people were injured.
But yeah, you're right about this not cooling off, because people are taking sides. You have Qatar, Jordan, and Turkey siding with Saudi Arabia. You'll have people siding with Iran. And then in the midst of all this is the deal, the nuclear deal with the West, the United Nations, but it was a multi-party deal about Iran dearming its nuclear program and getting some economic benefits out of that. In terms of, you know, unfrozen money and being able to trade and sell their oil. And on top of that, you have Saudi Arabia. I mean, there's already kind of an economic proxy war going on because Saudi Arabia has been dumping its oil on the market to drive down the prices, to stymie competition, primarily from Iran, almost in anticipation for more Iranian oil to go on the market. It's affected Canada, the United States as well, and domestic oil production. But yeah, it's kind of a gong show. And not that the Middle East would ever made a lot of was this quiet, unassuming area. But I mean, it's really hard to see this not de-escalate anytime soon. Although Iran has made overtures, which have been swiftly batted away by Saudi Arabia, and Hassan Rouhani, the president of Iran, has called for the people who burned down the Saudi embassy to be brought to justice as swiftly as possible. But you know, what's the likelihood of that?
Yeah, next to zero. I mean, you know, in the scheme of things, it's just an embassy, but hugely symbolic in that embassies are supposed to be. Technically, the turf of the country who are occupying it. But that's been thrown out the window many, many times, at least this past century. And, of course, in this one now. Yeah, so and there's also the fact of the, I wouldn't say strange relationship, but special relationship that the United States has with the Saudis.
Yeah.
In that even though that they're dumping all this oil onto the market and it's affecting the U.S. and affecting Canada, as we've seen the tar sands going for a dump because it's not cost-effective to get that oil out of the ground anymore. Also, the United States fleet. If you're wondering where the American fleet hangs out when they're in this area, it's in Bahrain, who are allied with the Saudis.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot at stake in terms of what side America takes. And of course, and Iran is always, you can see with conservative commentators, everybody still hates Iran. generally there's this, you know, built-in hatred toward them. And, of course, Israel hates them. And, of course, there are people that always side with Israel. So it's just, you know, people picking the side that they're on. And will anybody come out on top?
It's funny you mentioned siding with Israel, because there was somebody reported today that Tom Cotton, who's the U.S. senator who's been the most vocal against the Iran deal, has gotten $900,000 from Israel to basically petition against the deal. So money talks, even when you're supposedly doing things for...
That's pretty much the states just getting their own money back, because the states fund Israel to a large degree to prop up their military in the region, to be that, you know, as they always say, the only democracy in the region. But so then, and that's another wrinkle too in the who is fighting whom. And then we have the Hezbollah in Lebanon are backed by Iran, or they follow Iran. I think one day we should just go through all of the players, and then your minds will be completely like, what were they talking about? Because it's difficult. It's very, very difficult to follow. But, you know, you would hope that things will calm down. I don't know what it would take. You know, some would say a UN intervention or but it's just you'd have to hope that calmer heads will prevail. But by the sounds of it, it's going to probably get a bit worse, if not a lot worse, before it gets better. And it sounds like it's probably going to play out in Yemen, because that's where the chess game's going on right now.
Yeah, and, you know, there's been a lot of stuff going on in Yemen. It kind of skirts attention over here. So it seems like maybe we should be paying more attention to what's going on in Yemen. But
that's our job.
Yeah.
Maybe next week.
Maybe next week. Something that is getting quite a bit of attention, obviously, is the ongoing presidential race in the United States. Believe it or not, the actual race hasn't started yet, because it starts with the Iowa caucuses, which is 25 days away. It's at the end of January. It's on the last Tuesday of January, which is actually the first contest. I mean, it's been going on for like a year already, but this is the first contest to decide who's going to be the nominee. And it's the same for Democrats and Republicans. The Republican side, of course, is the race that we've been rather preoccupied with by and large because of the presence of Donald J. Trump. And
can't help but laugh when his name's mentioned. It's like,
yeah. But the real story on the Republican side this week has been Ted Cruz, who has been quote unquote birthered because he was actually born in Calgary. Little known fact, perhaps not little known, but little paid attention
everyone
to
knows
fact.
Now. Yeah.
Everyone knows now.
Yep.
But he was born in Calgary. His father is Cuban. His mother is American. She was from Delaware originally. And him and his family left Calgary when he was four. According to Brett, and I read this on PolitiFact, just about every case law available, he is he's considered a natural-born American citizen, but he's still being Trump, truther in chief, birther in chief, who seems to be taking him to town for not being real American.
Yeah, but Trump does this whole people are saying, I don't know, but I think he's a Canadian, and I don't think he can be president. He hasn't been as attack dog as he was with Obama, you know, like just show the birth certificate kind of thing. It's been a little bit, not much though. He's held back a little bit, but it was only a matter of time.
Yeah.
And yeah, it probably will be some kind of massive legal thing to try and determine natural born. And it sounds like he did give up his Canadian citizenship, which is a bigger deal in the States in terms of just having the one citizenship than it is in Canada, because myself and plenty of others, millions of us, are dualies in terms of dualies. That's Trump should steal that one. He's a dualie. Get rid of him. So yeah, but talk about sucking all the air out of it. Like Trump is just like, but he's still on top. What's his percentage? It's something ridiculous. Like what?
35.3% is the national average. Yeah.
Whereas I guess with Hillary, it's 53 and change or something. Hillary, in terms of the Democrat, we're talking about Republican and Democrat leaders, and Hillary is on top of 53. And Saunders, who's the great hope of lefties everywhere, is down second with 32, which isn't too shabby.
No.
Speaking of not too shabby, to take in a slightly different direction, I was reading about Former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson. I had no idea who this person was. He's entered the race. He's a libertarian, the magic word, which was the rumor Trump may potentially, if he doesn't get the nomination, run as an independent with the L word was mentioned. Mm-hmm. Not liberal, of course. That's a bad word. But anyway, this guy got just shy of 1% of the vote last time. Mm-hmm. It was 1.2 million votes, which is a lot. Like, in Canada, people win with, like, hey, won with 20 votes. But just imagine this guy running for president is getting, like, that's quite sizable. So I don't know if he's a real player. I hadn't really heard about him until this week doing the reading up for the show. But that's like, wow, 1.2 million votes could make or break a deal like it did with Bush and Gore, right?
It depends if he catches on. Of course, no one was really talking about Ralph Nader at this point back in 2000.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, Ralph Nader was a huge spoiler in 2000.
Or Ross Perot.
Well,
Keep going back.
Ross Perot was a weird kind of aside.
It was interesting to watch, though.
Yeah.
For Dana Carvey.
Although, because I was like 11 or 12 at the time. I was a bit older than that. I was 13 or 14. But I mostly remember it for...
I'll tell you how old I was.
I mostly remember it for Dana Carvey doing Ross Perot on Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. But... back to this year, though, Trump has swore up and down that he's dedicated to, if he's going to win, if he's going to run for president, he's going to run as a Republican nominee or not at all. We'll see how well that holds up. As for the rest, the other people in the Republican field, it looks like it's Cruz. I mean, if Cruz is sort of been making the news more this week, it's because he's at 20%. So a lot of people are seeing him as the anti-Trump choice now. Rubio has kind of went back at 11. And we had two people quit the race during the holiday break. Lindsey Graham and George Pataki both left the race. Mm-hmm. So I believe that brings the number down to a more manageable 12 major Republican candidates now.
Jeez, yeah.
Unfortunately, it's kind of all the people who were never on the main stage at any of these debates who are out now, like Bobby Jindal, Rick mm-hmm. Perry, and who else has left the race? Scott Walker. Oh, Scott Walker was a main stage
Lindsey
candidate.
Lindsey Graham.
Yeah. So there's five of them that have left. Rick Santorum is one of the final undercard candidates who's still in there, and they'll literally have to get the cane out and drag him away because he finished second last time. It's mostly because he was last man standing. He has no infrastructure to speak of, mm-hmm. and he doesn't need it. He just stands there till it's over.
I'm still here. And this is the thing, though, the people with the statistical zeros, like, there's hardly any point. It's probably just for some kind of exposure of some description, but the caucuses are what generally filters these people out.
Right.
What was it, the 1st of February for Iowa? And then what's the next big one is New Hampshire, right?
Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. Yeah.
What's the one with six? Super Tuesday is
Super
the one
Tuesday.
With the six primaries. And I think
that's the beginning of March, usually.
If anybody hangs around after that that's just been clobbered, then they're just wasting their time, probably.
I think by Super
Tuesday. Or trying
Tuesday
to make some kind of stand.
Yeah. I think by Super Tuesday in 2012, it was Gingrich, Romney, and Santorum that were left. We'll have to wait and see. I mean,
the conventions are July, is that right? I believe they have their conventions, and then that's
I believe
sort of,
the Kings the Republican convention will be the first one. It'll be in late July or early August, and then the Democrat one will be late August, early September.
Geez, everybody thought the Canadian election was long. This just goes on and on.
But yeah, like the Cruz and Rubio are seen as the anti-Trump candidates, so they'll probably be in it for a while. Carson is down at 10.
Laughing at Carson.
No, well, he's it's understandable. He's down at 10% now. Bush is at just over 3%, but he still has a lot of money. Christie has a lot of establishment support, so they might be in for the long haul.
Yeah, I saw a Bush ad. I don't really watch American TV that much. But it was an ad for Bush. I was like, well, that's interesting. Wow.
And it wasn't the beer. You thought it was for the beer for a minute.
No. Bush Light.
Well, We can make jokes about Bush Light.
Yikes.
And Jeb Bush. On the Democratic side, because you mentioned Bernie, there was a bit of a controversy over the holiday because of...
yelling at somebody.
Well, if there was a controversy every time Bernie Sanders yelled at somebody.
It's every day.
Yeah. No, there was a controversy because someone from his campaign got access to Clinton data or the data for Hillary Clinton supporters through the DNC site. The DNC shut off the Sanders campaign access to the site because they under the assumption there was maybe some hacker hanky-panky going on. The Sanders campaign threatened to take the DNC to court. DNC turned it back on, the access, and now there's actually a pretty steady contingent of the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party that is demanding that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's currently the head of the DNC, step down because she's too in the tank for Hillary.
Hmm. Yeah, because it sounds like the offenders were reprimanded, and I think at least one was let go right away. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't as if these people overstepped and they took care of it. It was like, they shouldn't have done that, and they're gone, the end. And I remember Sanders apologized at least once, but sorry, Hillary.
Yeah. Well, apparently this was a problem that they had found, that the firewall wasn't adequate for this information. It seems like Sims all over again. People remember Sims here in Canada. Yeah. But, the firewall wasn't adequate, and the Sanders staffers were able to access this information and reported it to DNC and said, hey, just so you know, we're able to get access to this information, and we probably shouldn't be able to be. And
they're like, why are you looking at that?
Yeah, it seems like a kind of sketchy they said kind of deal. And it hasn't really been settled. But, to a lot of people who think that the Democratic campaign is too much in the tank for Hillary Clinton, it certainly hasn't helped that assumption that it seems that the Sanders campaign is getting an extra level of scrutiny that...
And Hillary came out and said, Sanders, when Sanders is done, please just come join me. She's been behaving probably since day one that she's got the gig. Well, she doesn't officially, but everybody's all signs point to yes. Whereas, is that going to happen with Trump? That's still not certain. But if the numbers are anything to go by, it's looking like Trump, isn't it?
Well, the numbers can be skewered though, because they were talking about. People, when computers do polls, when they send out have the automated callers on the computer, the automated dialers to do the polls, people will vote, will press one for Trump in terms of who they're supporting. But when it's a human being, they won't say Trump. They'll throw their support to someone else. So there may be a whole thing where the numbers are totally being skewered because people are just punking the pollsters like, I'll screw around and say I'm voting Trump or
vote
Carson.
Vote for Walker. Press 12. You're like, oh, my God, we're still at it.
I'm waiting for him. Anyway, won't be the last we'll talk about that this year. But it is the last we'll talk about it for this hour, and we are going to go and take a break and play some music and play some ads and catch our breath, and then we'll be right back here. You're listening to Open Sources on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
This is K-Train Fitzsimmons playing the heavily distorted chromatic harmonica. You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM.
That was Bruce Springsteen from an album called High Hopes, which is, it sounds like it's remixes of his hits and popular songs from 2014. And that song was called American Skin, 41 Shots. And we're going to probably be talking about a few more than 41 shots in this next half, I think. Sadly.
Yeah, sadly indeed. Barack Obama, current president of the United States, or at least for the next 365-some-odd days, he decided to, once again, in the wake of congressional stymieism or roadblockiness, whatever term you want to use, wants to use his executive authority to take some kind of action on gun control. And if you think about the sheer enormity of mass shootings in the United States, and keep in mind, too, that violent crime involving guns has actually gone down as a trend the last several years, but there have been a plethora of mass shootings in the last several years, from San Bernardino to Aurora, Colorado, to Sandy Hook, to Tucson. And so enough is enough. And although I'm sure he was wont to use executive authority, Obama has decided that's what he's going to do. Measures include making sure if you sell a gun, you do a background check. That's, in other words, closing the loopholes for gun shows and selling guns over the internet. Basically, Obama wants it to make it so that if you sell a gun, you are a dealer and you have to do all the things that gun dealers do, including run background checks. There is also more money for law enforcement to enforce current gun control rules, 200 more ATF agents being hired amongst those, an increase in mental health treatment and reporting, and the government is going to help in the promotion of safe gun technology, so things like palm scanners and the handle and that kind of thing.
Yeah, the smart guns.
Smart guns, that's right.
This is one of those topics where Obama said himself it's probably the most polarizing and partisan topic in America. Mm-hmm. And the split is pretty easy to see. It's, you know, generally Republican people are super pro-gun and Democrats aren't. But that's not to say that they aren't particularly against gun control. It sounds like a lot of Republicans and gun-owning ones, I think it's in the 80% range, are okay with some form of gun control. Mm-hmm. And you would almost think the companies, because I think a lot of this is being driven by not just, well, gun nuts in air quotes, people who are pro-gun and the NRA and the gun companies, you would think that they would want people to crack down, or the government to crack down on the gray market. Because it seems you can go to a gun show and there's just guns kind of lying around of whatever vintage, but they're kind of off the grid in terms of where they come from. It sounds like a lot of these guns are used in crime. Not only those guns, but there seems to be a lot that are stolen from people and people don't report them stolen. And those mm-hmm. are the ones that end up in other crimes. So it belongs to this person, but it's like, well, it got stolen a couple of years ago and I never reported it. Which leads to, and this number was unbelievable, and I heard it twice this week, 30,000 deaths in America each year with guns. And that's mm-hmm. just not, this is beyond mass shootings. Believe it or not, mass shootings are a small fraction of that. Mm-hmm. You know, you name it. It's like they solve things with a gun. 30,000. Can you imagine? That's like small city getting taken out every year. And this is supposed to be acceptable.
Yeah.
So you would, and no wonder Obama was emotional from the gun lobby, and in particular, they were saying, oh, it's crocodile tears. He's just doing this to, ramp up the rhetoric. They described it as condescending rhetoric. I didn't think there was anything condescending about it. And he also made the point of saying, well, you know, we're not really, nobody's going to, in the way he said it, maybe that was the condescending tone. He's like, nobody wants to take your gun away. There was a little bit in there of the sort of school teacher kind of like, nobody's going to take this away from you. Because he can't. And they turn so often to the Constitution. Like, it can't, I don't think it can be done.
Yeah.
But something definitely needs to be done in America.
Well, the problem isn't that nobody wants tighter gun control. People do want tighter gun control. You have a lobby with a dangerous level of authority and control in that country. You know, when you have 90%, and this was like right after Sandy Hook, this number, it's settled down to the 80% number you mentioned. But when you have 90% of the country saying, yeah, let's expand background checks to make it harder for wackos to get a pistol, and the government comes back and says, no, we're not going to do that. We can't do that. We don't have the votes. It's symptomatic of the broken system. And again, you have I can't remember the fellow's name off the top of my head, but the guy we were talking about before the break who was retweeting all the hopes and prayers of the congressman in the wake of San Bernardino while quoting the number of the amount of money they get from gun lobbies for their campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody posted online, like, we won't stand for Obama's dangerous overreach on the Second Amendment. And he retweeted that and said, for $900,000 in campaign donations, I certainly hope not. You know, kind of sarcastically. Yeah. For almost $1 million, you're going to stand up for your campaign donors, for sure. I appreciate what he's trying to do, and yeah, there is a dangerous level. I think in the United States, there's a dangerous level of executive overreach. But when you have a whole level of government that just isn't functioning, you know, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah, and of course, we always see that we get the extreme views. There was a teacher. Where was it, in Florida? Florida Atlantic University. A communications prof was like, he was saying that, oh, Sandy Hook was a hoax. You have this range it was so weird. I think that was the strangest story to come out of this, in that, because Sandy Hook was mentioned, like, oh, Sandy Hook was a hoax. This is a professor at a university in the States. So this just shows you the range. And the problem is the people at that end of the range that have the influence and the money to give to Congress people or senators or whomever, and then you have this the gun nuts that are just and believe strange conspiratorial wacko stuff, you get this air of the whole thing. It's like, really? Are you guys serious? And then, but it bleeds into the Republicans too. Like, what was it, Ted Cruz? All the Republicans, like, oh, we are going to quash. When I'm elected, these executive orders will be quashed. We're just going to get rid of them. Yeah. And how dare you talk like this? It's near. They didn't use the word treason. But the way they talk about Obama, it's like, you know, this is against our rights. You know, you can't mess with the Second Amendment. No one is saying that. And Obama was right. He's like, we're not going to take your guns away. But in terms of channeling it, it has to be done. I mean, absolutely. You know, they will say, well, anybody could get a gun anywhere. Honest, and I've told this story before about going to the States, getting the carry and concealed weapon training. The guy's like, yo, if you guys weren't Canadians, I'd sell you guns right now. It was that simple.
Yeah. Well, when you drive through Michigan and you see on the corner the gun and liquor stores,
yeah,
you know, gun and liquor, hey, that goes well together. But
of course,
I will say
in
about
the movies,
Ted,
maybe. Yeah.
I will say about Ted Cruz. Well, as I think of it, Ed Helms, I did a Daily Show report where about some state somewhere that made it legal to carry a bun and to carry guns into bars, and he says, well, it makes perfect sense because alcohol creates conflicts and guns resolve conflicts. But Ted Cruz had my favorite quote of the week regarding this, and he said, you live by the pen, you die by the pen, and my pen has an eraser. This is what he said about this executive action.
Wow, that's deep, man.
But yeah, I mean, that's probably...
My pen has an erasable pen. I don't know. Yeah, it's, who knows?
There are erasable pens, but I don't think that's the what he was getting at. On top of
He's
it all...
He's a quill pen kind of guy, I think, somehow. I don't know.
After he kills the
the goose with his bare hands.
The goose with his...
Canadian goose.
No, with his... Yeah.
With a gun. Goose. Yes, of course.
But no, yeah, the thing that galled me is the day that Obama made this speech... I don't know where the CBC dug up the biggest effing gun nut they possibly could. But Carolyn McKenzie has this
speed dial.
This gun nut on. And he's like, well, you know what stopped Nazis from rising up in the United States? Guns.
Was this a Canadian guy or an American?
This was an American guy. But yeah, this is like he's going on like it's like to stops Nazis from rising up and how the United States and the United Kingdom have the exact same murder rate. No, they don't.
No, they definitely don't.
and Carolyn McKenzie's like, well, we'll have to go to the control room. And it's just like one of the things that ticks me off about the CBC these days. It's like they dig up they do the CNN thing where they just put anyone on TV because it's on TV, and then it fills up time. And
it's also to get people to watch, to visit, love, that kind of thing, right? It's somebody who's at one extreme or another is far more interesting than somebody giving a measured response.
Yeah.
Like we do all the time, right?
I know. We're so measured.
The measured,
but, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
your measured response team.
The thing that really disappoints me is that you can't talk about reopening the Second Amendment. Nobody is willing to talk about it or talk about, like, passing a 26th Amendment that says, you know, if you want to go back to the days of flint lighters and one shot per, you know, per turn at a gun.
Let's keep the Second Amendment. Yeah, like a musket ball, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because I think they do need to not at least open up, but like get a more solid definition, because there's a little bit of play because there's that bit they always knock off about the well-armed militia.
Yeah.
And I believe we're going to get to the militia aspect of it next, aren't we?
It's a good segue.
Yeah,
because there
is
a well-regulated militia in Oregon right now. They are called the Citizens for Constitutional Freedom. They are led by a gentleman named Amon Bundy. And if the Bundy name seems familiar to you, it's because of his father, Cliven Bundy, the so-called freedom rancher who had his cattle grazing on land owned by the Bureau of Land Management in Nevada for about 20 years and didn't pay fees till he owed $1 million in back fees. There was a standoff between him and the government. The government signed this thing happened in Oregon, people were like, well, whatever happened to Cliven Bundy? It turned out the government was just like, I'll leave the old coot alone. And that's how that turned out, because apparently he's still letting his cattle graze on that land. And I guess it's just going to accumulate until he dies, and then they'll send
Don't tread on me. Yeah,
yeah,
something
they'll
like
send
that.
His estate a check in the end. But yeah, these guys, they went to the Malheur Wildlife Refuge. It's in East Oregon. The nearby town is pretty much locked down. Every law enforcement agency from A to Z is there. Nothing's really happened yet. I believe they shut off the power. There's some indication these guys might have brought generators with them, because it's actually colder in East Oregon than it is here right now. It's like -8 at night. And so it looks like these guys might be in it for the long haul. There was a YouTube video of this one coot who, to use the correct terminology, saying, like, it was a goodbye video to his wife and children.
Was that the guy in the truck that was kind of crying, that it just went on way too long?
Yeah. That was him.
Could have been a little bit. And he kept getting emotionally overcome. Yeah, there's no edit. That stuff's unfortunate. He was like, I got to do this, right? Was he the guy? I got to do this. Do you really have to do this? I don't know. I don't think so. I also saw the comment from the sheriff, which is interesting. He was just kind of like, yeah, we're just hoping. Can you guys just go home? it was very, like, very matter of fact. Like, you know, just go.
Look, it was funny for the weekend. You know, we had nothing else going on.
But some of the comments, too, it's like the wives are going to get tired probably and say, you know, can you just come home and do what you were doing? Because it is a bit of a quiet time right now for ranchers, and maybe that's part of what's – I don't think it's just ranchers. There has been the
– Well, Amon Bundy isn't a rancher. He owns a company that services semi-trucks.
Oh, there you go.
So he's not a rancher at all. He's
And they're not from Oregon.
No.
Just before airtime, something came down the wire. PBS was saying that they were having a town hall meeting, and that the people in this area are fed up with this. They want it to end. They're like, they want these people just to go back where they came from.
Well, there's no
school.
Go
back to your wife.
Yeah.
Go back to where you came from and just get out. Because these guys, this militia, the Citizens for Constitutional Freedom.
Yeah.
You know, for people who are so anti-government, they really always fall back to the Constitution, right? Like, is this the purest document ever or something?
Well,
Second Amendment.
There's a lot of people who think, yeah, this is, like, I don't know. Like, there's quotes from presidential candidates where they say that the Constitution was, you know, from God's brain to Jefferson's pen. But if we can point out how much these guys hate the government, and there's actually been a lot of reporting about this, Amon Bundy has received $530,000 through the Small Business Administration Loan Guarantee Program,
Ooh.
A.K.A. government money.
Oh, yeah, that money's okay.
Speaking of the ranchers, to allow their cattle to graze on government land, they get it 93% cheaper than the average market rate for the land. So there is a system they worked out, and Aggies on campus here might know more about it than I do, but it's AUM, and what it just basically means is a measurement of land required to sustain a cow and her calf for a month. So typically, one AUM of land is $20.10 per month. The ranchers get it for $1.35 per month.
So they're getting a really sweet deal, but yeah. It's not enough because it's not free because it's our land. And that's what you see, too. Like, we'll call him Guy in the Truck. I don't know his name. It doesn't matter what his name is. Guy in the Truck. They use the coded language of we are free men and liberty. Liberty is the most common. Ted Cruz uses liberty a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It's like it's almost like a coded message to the people. And then, like I said, they always lean back on the Constitution. It's in their name. The Dudes for Constitutional Freedom or whatever. But it's – I don't know. Like, it's – the surprising thing is, and I agree with the points that have been made on social media, if it was anybody else, they would have bombed the tar out of them already.
Right.
They would have gone, if it was somebody who even had a whiff of Al-Qaeda or the Daesh or some or eco-terrorists or whatever you want to call them, They would have been in there minutes after it happened and blown the snot out of them. But that didn't happen. Because I guess it's just been met with sort of a shrug, like, oh, you know, it's almost like, well, we kind of know these guys. They'll probably just go away eventually.
Well, yeah, look at that sheriff.
Somebody will go for cigarettes
yeah.
and then they won't come back.
Yeah, look at that sheriff. Like,
yeah,
he's just exasperated. And I understand. Like, they have the schools there closed because they're afraid stuff's going to happen any minute.
Go on.
But yeah, it's, there is a bit of hypocrisy there. Because I do think if they were black or native or
anything
Muslim,
but whitey would have been smoked out of there. Absolutely. I think there's truth to that. But then you look at it and say, well, maybe this is the way authorities should be handling all situations like this, right?
Oh, that's the flip side of it too.
It's like why don't you do this with the other people that you think are the presumed threat? Somebody brought up the bombing of the Move House where that was like a neighborhood in, was it Philadelphia?
Mm-hmm.
Where they just dropped an explosive on this house and killed a bunch of people and burnt down an entire neighborhood because of this standoff that was going on. A similar thing, it's not completely the same, but what else has been pointed out too was like, well, we don't want a situation like Waco, which killed about 80 people.
Well, that's the kind of shadow that this is kind of cast in is,
but they generally go in with the guns blazing. Of course, the comparisons are made to Trayvon Martin or whatever. It's just like, we're just going to go in and shoot.
The kid in Cleveland,
the water pistol, or whatever it was, like, or the pellet gun.
Yeah,
just shoot him, right? Even though they knew, at least they had been radioed that it's probably not a real gun. Yeah, we've got these guys with serious ammunition. This militia. With all their gear on, waving the pistols around, and yet that's somehow okay. I would never say that they should go in with the guns blazing, but it's a massive double standard. You know, maybe they will get tired and the wives will call and they will, because they're all straight white males, of course, right? It's all wives. And will go away eventually. You'd hope so. Because it sounds like a nature interpretation center. It's not as if it's some... It's not a federal
target,
building in that, the operative government is there, but we're not leaving. We're going to stay for years. Are you really? People want to go bird watching, guys. that's how ridiculous this is.
Well, it's...
But hopefully it doesn't end with the guns blazing, but the potential is there, obviously.
It just, it amazes me how misinformed these guys are, really, because they're talking about how government taking this land. And interesting fact, a lot of the land in the Western United States is owned by the government. A great vast majority of it is federal land because people are so far spaced out, and between the Rocky Mountains and the Mississippi River, there's most of the America's people are along the coast. And this land that has been taken and stolen by the government is land that, in the 30s was, people were losing their livelihoods trying to make use of this land. And it was overpriced and the government ends up buying it back so these people can get on with their lives. And the government didn't steal anything.
No, and this is the thing, like, the pathological hatred of the government is something, because there is a relationship between these lands and these people, like you were saying about the ridiculous rates that they get. And it sounds like the initial thing with the Hammonds, who they're coming to the defense of, was that they had fires on their own land that got out of control and burned government land.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's the other thing. These guys that they came in to defend and say the
actually
government
wrecking
is overreaching.
Stuff.
They went willingly back to jail.
Yeah.
And it sounds like nothing to do with
it
us.
Sounds like they've distanced themselves from these guys. They're like, well, you know, like we did this thing, and
It was basically an accident, but you know, the law is the law. They were sentenced originally, but it's demanded a 5-year minimum sentence.
Yeah, isn't that weird? It's like they had these shortened sentences, and the judge is like, not long enough. Go back. Like, how often? How does that happen?
I mean, yeah, that's kind of weird.
I'm not even sure. I don't know if that's a state thing or something. It's like, well. We figured he didn't serve long enough.
That's weird enough, but I mean, the whole fact of the matter comes down to the guys they came down there to defend have willingly gone back to prison, which is the very thing they went down there to defend these guys to stop from happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're still there.
The who's who of nut jobs have shown up to defend the guys that don't want to be defended in the empty Nature Interpretive Center with a gift shop.
We'll see what happens.
I don't know. Hopefully they just do sort of slink away.
Slink away, boys. Slink away.
Get back in your truck and like, I have to do this. I have to do this. No, you don't.
We're going to slink away.
The kids are waiting for you, dude.
Yes.
Go home.
And our kids are waiting for us at home. Because that's the end of our show this week. And I hope everybody enjoyed our specials that we did over the break, the political movie specials and the year-end special. And you can listen to those now. And I will tell you where in a minute, because first I'm going to plug our website, opensourcesguelph.com. And you can go there and get news and stuff through the week. One of my New Year's resolutions is to post more, so we'll see what happens.
Like mine is to blog more, but we'll see.
You can connect with us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and you can ask us questions and comments there. Go to our Twitter feed at @OS_Guelph, and you can listen to all our podcasts on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean. Just go there and look for Guelph Politicast, and all the Open Sources previous episodes are there as well. As for me, you can find me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
I'm Scotty Hertz on Twitter. Seems I have some new followers. Thank you, new followers. Also, same on Facebook, Scotty Hertz. And like I said, the blog, Spanner Book. And I should just mention that we really do like feedback. It's always nice to hear from you. If you have a burning topic, like those guys should really be talking about this. Mm-hmm. We entertain it all.
Yep.
Doesn't matter if it's nut job or the best thing ever. No, you know what I mean. We will consider all topics.
Yes, well said. That's it for this week. So coming up next is DJ Sounds Good to Me. I do think I hear her out in the hallway.
Oh, there you go.
And you can hear some of that good music here at the top of the hour. This is CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus Community Radio, and we will be back here with more Open Sources next week at 5 p.m.